This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Great to have you with us this afternoon. It is a beautiful day here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Wind blowing softly from left to right, some soft clouds, a lot of sunshine, and a really great afternoon and into the evening for baseball. The White Sox are playing some solid baseball here over the last week and a half as well. So that's been a great little surprise, too. White Sox had a tough first month of the season, but now looking a whole lot better and winning a couple of games against the Guardians in the first two of this series sets them up for potentially a series win with a W either tonight or tomorrow on Mother's Day. Hey, speaking of, if you're still looking for a Mother's Day gift, tomorrow, celebrate all moms with a special pregame parade around the field before the game at 1:10 p.m. Don't miss the chance to gift a heartwarming day at the ballpark and an unforgettable experience on the field. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day in advance to every mom out there. And those of you who miss your moms, too. I get it. I'm with you. And it is going to be a great day tomorrow at the ballpark as well. I want to start with a couple of different things here about these White Sox. But as always, this show is your show. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. And while we focus our attention on the White Sox and Guardians at Guaranteed Rate Field this evening, this is a huge day in Major League Baseball because we've got the debut of what may well be the best pitching prospect of a generation. I know everyone listening here in Chicago is more than likely tired, maybe even worn out by the phrase generational talent, what with the Bears just up north having drafted Caleb Williams as the quarterback with their first overall selection in this draft a couple of weeks ago. No shade, right? Caleb Williams hopefully is going to be a terrific quarterback for the Bears for decades to come and Super Bowls aplenty and all that other kind of stuff. But one of the conversations that I caught quite a bit of while listening to our flagship station, ESPN 1000, whether it was Cap'n Jay Hood or Carmen Yurko, or Waddle and Sylvie, or Bleck and Abdallah, is over and over again, you would hear the phrase generational talent attached to Caleb Williams, and then there'd be pushback about, well, two drafts ago, you had a generational quarterback then, and two drafts before that, another generational quarterback. Is it all of these quarterbacks that go 1-1, or do you have to go back to Andrew Luck? And you know how it works. With baseball, it's a lot different, and I'm glad that it is. Paul Skeens made his debut for the Cubs or for the Pirates today against the Cubs, and is pitching well. Just got out of a bases loaded jam. We'll keep our eye on that, and we'll talk about the debuts of generational pitchers. I'm old enough to remember, and I think a lot of you are, the debut of Steven Strasburg back in 2010. It was heralded. It was the world stopped. The baseball world stopped to watch Steven Strasburg make his debut for the Nationals back then. And when we were talking to Jim Callis a couple of weeks ago, and he's told this to a number of people, Callis, one of the top prospect writers for MLB.com, Callis mentioned that Skeens is one of three pitching prospects that he grouped together as the best pitching prospects of their generation. Callis has been doing this for 36 years, I think it is. It is Mark Pryor of the Cubs, who debuted in 2002, Steven Strasburg of the Nationals, who debuted in 2010, and now Paul Skeens, draft picked out of LSU, debuting for the Pirates today. So this is a big day for Major League Baseball all around, and we'll talk a bit about some White Sox starters who have made their debuts to a whole lot of applause. I mean, it's not like you have to be a generational pitching talent in order to make a noteworthy debut or have the home fans excited for debuting. And, just one last thing here on Skeens before we tail back to the White Sox here in the solid win tonight by a really good pitcher in his own right, Garrett Crochet. But the other cool thing that the Pirates were able to do here is make sure that Skeens debuted at home in front of the Pittsburgh Pirates fans. That franchise has been looking for something to cheer for. Hadn't made the playoffs since 2015. Now with Skeens in the fold, the hope is that they, you know, build around him, spend a little money, hopefully, enrich the franchise, and make themselves a playoff push in that NL Central. But starting at home, that's cool. So, to the White Sox. Lineups are out for this third game of three against the Guardians this evening. Get you those in just a second. Kind of a familiar look here, too. And I think this is where, other than the pitching side of things, kind of where I want to start this afternoon show is about the first six hitters for the White Sox, because it has been remarkably consistent over the last couple of games. Tommy Pham leads off. He's in center field. Gavin Sheets is in right. He'll bat second today. Andrew Vaughn is at first base. He's batting three. Eloy Jimenez will bat four and be the designated hitter. Andrew Benintendi is in left field. And then Brian Ramos is at third base, batting six. 7, 8, and 9 for the White Sox are where you've seen most of the moving around here for Pedro Grifol's lineups. Paul DeJong has been hitting really well over the last 5-6 games. He's at short, batting 7. Nicky Lopez, batting 8 and playing 2nd. And Martin Maldonado will do the catching this evening. Corey Lee gets the night off after homering last night. Scored 2 runs in total. Came around to score on that error by Gilberto Arias that allowed 2 to score. And the White Sox took the lead last night. But really, it's those, you know, kind of essentially top 6 hitters, right? Pham, Sheets, Vaughn Jimenez, Benintendi. 2 nights ago, Pham, Sheets, Vaughn Jimenez, Benintendi, Ramos. 3 nights ago, Pham, Sheets, Vaughn Jimenez, Benintendi, Ramos. I mean, that seems to be, and Grifol talked about it before the game yesterday, maybe it was the day before, that this is how it's going to be for a little bit until it's not, which, you know, you totally understand. Injuries happen and guys don't feel great and matchups pop up and all that other kind of stuff. But as this offense has really searched hard for a kind of steadiness after the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season where runs were at times impossible to come by, the shutouts were coming faster than they needed to. Now at 11-28 and playing much better baseball over their last 2 weeks, I mean, the White Sox, check these numbers out, it's a lot better than it had been, are 5-2 over their last 7 games, 8-6 over their last 14, and 5-3 in their last 8 home games. That's much better baseball. It has come in conjunction, it seems, with the top 6 hitters in the lineup that I mentioned to you earlier in a couple of different combinations, but those guys really getting going, right? There's the Andrew Benintendi power surge from about 2 weeks ago. There's the Tommy Pham of it all now at the top of the lineup and setting the table. Andrew Vaughn has begun to take a lot better swings, and while the results are still, you know, middling a little bit, it is certainly looking better for Vaughn at the plate in this last week, week and a half, than it had in the first couple. Eloy Jimenez had a couple of tough games here to start May, but in the end of April, he was really starting to look a bit more like Eloy Jimenez, making his big run coming back in the second half last season. Brian Ramos has been a ton of fun to watch. He had the hit streak snapped last night, took an 0-for-4, 2 strikeouts, a ground out, and a deep fly ball to left field, which off the bat looked like it could have gone. The bat speed for Ramos has been elite. Now, granted, it doesn't come with the same kind of sample size that the rest of Major League Baseball has if you started the year at the big league club. He's only played in 6 starts, but the bat speeds have been tracked now, and they are solid for Brian Ramos. Here's hoping that he stays around for a good long while and gets his feet underneath of him. It is possible that Ramos gets shuffled back to the minor leagues at some point here in the foreseeable future. But while he's been here, he's done nothing but earn himself more playing time, which is awesome. Speaking of Ramos, we're going to speak to Brian Ramos a little bit later on here in White Sox Weekly. I had a chance to sit down with him yesterday in the dugout, talk a lot about his big league call-up, what it was like to be pulled off the field in Birmingham for no reason, at least not that he knew of at the time, only to be told after the ball game that he was going up to the bigs. You'll hear that story and a whole lot more from Brian Ramos in just a little bit here on the show. I think you're going to like it. He is a very engaging guy and a dude that a lot of people in the clubhouse, a lot of his teammates have gravitated toward to be a real constant source of positivity and energy while he's spent his time coming up through the minor leagues in the White Sox system. What can you say about Gavin Sheets here? You know, hitting two for a while now, taking good at bats. The on-base percentage has really clicked up. That's what's really impressed me. And even though Sheets had himself an 0-for-4 with a pair of strikeouts last night, he also flied very deep to center field. He's leading the league in line drive rate, which is good. I mean, if you're Gavin and you're getting on base at this clip and you are now kind of realizing something that you'd identified as a challenge for you prior, right, not getting regular at-bats and just really struggling to, as many players do, this isn't a Gavin-specific thing, really, but a lot of players struggle to find that timing and keep that rhythm if you're not getting regular at-bats. And the way the lineup and teams have been constructed here over the last 2 years, you know, Gavin was asked to be a dude off the bench that could provide some pop, play some right field, learn a new position, all these kinds of things. Now Gavin getting that regular run either in right or at first base has really given or shown what kind of consistent producer he can be here, at least in the first 6 weeks of the season. As much as the offense has been invigorated by this lineup here over the last 8-9 games, what was incredible to watch last night was the start from Garrett Crochet. He was absolutely dominant in his first 4 innings of work. How Will Brennan was able to rip a triple down into right center field is beyond me. The pitch he got was a changeup, if memory serves correctly, and it was down in the zone. Might have had a little bit too much plate. So I guess you can figure out that one. Brennan had a good night last night, whether it was against Crochet or a tough at-bat against Jordan Leisure in the 9th who locked it down. You'll hear from Jordan Leisure a little bit later on here in the show, too. Crochet, it's been really great to see him bounce back after 3 tough starts. And I say 3 because against the Cincinnati Reds, just back on April 13th, where he gives up 5, and then against the Phillies, where he gives up 7, and against the Twins, where he gives up 5 again. In one of those starts, it was against the Reds, 5 runs in 1 inning, 10 strikeouts, 3 walks. And that inning kind of spiraled. He was paper cut a little bit by some soft contact, then gave up a couple of harder hit balls, no doubt about it. But in those 3 games, Garrett Crochet totaled 11 2/3 innings, gave up 17 earned runs for a 13.11 ERA. Anything outside of that, and he's been one of the best pitchers in the game. That's not hyperbole. It's just those are the numbers. In his last 17 innings, including the start last night against the Guardians, 3 starts, 17 innings, 24 strikeouts, and 1 walk. One. And I think what's incredible about Crochet's command outside of those 3 starts were very clearly a couple of lessons had to be learned about, you know, what it is to be a starting pitcher, what kinds of pitches do attack hitters well, and which kinds did you just kind of think attacked them well. And a 3rd category, what kind of pitches worked as out pitches as a reliever, and what kind do you have to grind a little bit more to get as a starter. Those are processes we all watched live in those starts against the Reds and the Phillies and the Twins in the middle of April. What has really impressed me has been the total control for Garrett Crochet. It's one thing to shape your pitches the way you want to shape them. That's command. It's another thing to put those pitches where you want to. And I think with Crochet as a reliever over the last couple of years with the White Sox, what I'd always wondered is, at that size, right, 6'6" and maybe a little bit taller, with a giant leg kick and all those levers, are you going to be able to keep the mechanics aimed downhill and throw enough strikes to keep you in ball games? That's such a huge part of the conversation here with Crochet as the White Sox navigate some uncharted waters for a guy who'd been a reliever his entire big league career, had Tommy John, dealt with the shoulder issues last season. All of that got work. And then in the winter, between all of it, he goes, I'd like to be a starter. The White Sox say, well, we've always thought you could be a starter. Would you like to try now? And Garrett says, yeah, sure. How about I come out there and be one of the better, more intriguing talents from the left side in Major League Baseball? And the White Sox go, yeah, sure, that'd be fine. Why don't you go ahead and strike out a career high 11 against the Guardians last night? Thumbs up, good to go. I think, too, he's hard on himself in the right ways. Crochet is. You read some of the quotes post game. You hear what he talks. You hear what he talks about. You know, in the clubhouse. You read some of the stuff. James Feegan of SoxMachine.com had a great deep dive with Garrett Crochet. I want to say it was like 2 weeks ago, something like that. Just as he was emerging from those three rough starts against the Reds, Phillies, and Twins, and talked about where he the high expectations he sets for himself. And how he's kind of mixing his pitches along the way. I mean, you talk about control, and it would be one thing to say, yeah, Garrett Crochet, the fastball slider guy who had been the reliever using those pitches, has now used those and become a two-pitch guy and controlled those two pitches. But what he has also done just kind of along the way here is invent this cutter that's absolutely gross last night and getting swings and misses and freezing hitters at times, and a changeup. Forget that. Two different changeups along the way this year. He's thrown two different changeups along the way this season. One with a kind of a Vulcan grip. You know, you think of Spock, you kind of split those two fingers one way and two fingers the other, grip over the baseball and throw it. Vulcan change. He's messed with that a little while and then gone to a more, you know, kind of conventional changeup grip, one that he seems to be throwing now, that's given him more what he's been looking for along the way. I just think being able to be so new to starting and deal with, well, what does my pitch mix really need to be, and get major league hitters outs all at the same time is a truly incredible thing to watch happen in real time, as we're doing with Garrett Crochet. Now, there's the other side of this coin that I'm sure we have talked about, I know that we've talked about before, and that I'm sure the White Sox are talking about, you know, the day after every one of Crochet's starts, and that's, okay, how are we feeling? How many more innings do we have this season? How many more pitches do we have this season? What is it exactly that we've got to know about how you're feeling to make sure that nothing done this year costs us any Garrett Crochet starts down the line? Because fact of the matter is, while the White Sox are playing better baseball now, they are 11-28, and it'd be great to see them go on a run. But Garrett Crochet is just 25 years old, and you want to be 100% sure. I mean, he turns 25, I guess, in June. So 24 years old turning 25 in June. You want to make sure that you've got 30 starts for Crochet next year, 25 starts for Crochet next year, that as this team gets themselves back to organizationally where they expect to be, that Crochet is a centerpiece of all of that. So balancing those things is a truly difficult, and also I would guess for Crochet and Ethan Katz and Brian Bannister, you know, the whole pitching infrastructure side of things, Chris Getz, the general manager, a really rewarding thing to have to do. Crochet's been great. It's been a ton of fun to watch him last night, and the White Sox are winning a few more games in part because of Crochet getting back to elite levels. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play a little bit of White Sox manager Pedro Grifol's comments after last night's win. Talk a little bit about that game specifically, because it was very much one of, my opinion, the best wins the White Sox have had this season. It was a dominant win. It had a little bit of hiccup late. You got to have a little bit of drama, right? It was cleanly played defensively. They took advantage of some mistakes on the other side, you know, from the other dugout. And all of those things went into making a win when you wanted to get one, when you really wanted to get one, to make it three in a row and potentially set up and set up a potential series win with a W tonight. So that's where we'll head when we come back here on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. White Sox and Guardians coming up tonight. It is a 6:10 first pitch with Mike Clevinger, starting for the White Sox and Tristan McKenzie for the Guardians. You can learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Mike Huff and his crew will help everybody learn how to play baseball and softball. Starting at $165, kids ages 5 through 12 can register for a four-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. White Sox over the Guardians last night, 6-3 the final. Want to play you the postgame comments from Pedro Grifol. Maybe we'll do that coming up at the top of the hour. We are also keeping our eye on the biggest story in baseball today, and that is the debut of Pirates right-handed starter Paul Skeens. I just saw this tweet from Codify. That's the organization, third-party organization a lot of pitchers work with to kind of identify hot and cold zones. I'm simplifying it quite a bit here. Codify does some lot more complicated things, but that's kind of the thing. The tweet is this: most 100-plus mile-an-hour pitches in a total game, right? So I'm going to read you a list, a name followed by a number, and that's how many pitches over 100 miles an hour that pitcher had in any one start this year. Bobby Miller had a start where he threw five over 100 miles an hour. Jose Soriano had another start where he threw five over 100 miles an hour this year. Jared Jones, Skeens Pirates teammate, had a start earlier this season where he threw nine over 100 miles an hour. Jose Soriano had an even better start where he threw 11 pitches over 100 miles an hour this year. And Hunter Green, at least up until today, had topped the list. In a start earlier this season, Hunter Green threw 16 total pitches over 100 miles an hour this year. Paul Skeens, who is pitching for the Pirates now, threw 16 pitches over 100 miles an hour in his first two innings of work today. That's the kind of velocity and octane that Paul Skeens is working with against the Cubs this afternoon. Currently, that's a scoreless ball game, although both teams have threatened a little bit. And it's a good pitching matchup, too, with Justin Steele working for the Cubs. That's mind-blowing stuff. Len and DJ mentioned it the other night, maybe two nights. No, I think it was last night with Garrett Crochet pitching, or maybe it was two nights ago. No, it was two nights ago with Michael Kopech working to get that save, his fourth of the season against the Guardians. Kopech was absolutely shoving. I mean, just really throwing hard. You saw all those fastballs, and he hit triple digits. I think it was twice. And Len remarked to DJ, boy, we used to see triple digits, and everybody went, ooh, and ah. The last guy I can remember, and Kevin Zipak's our producer in the downtown Chicago studios, and Kevin, I need to throw a microphone on here because your memory is sharper than mine in a lot of cases. The first guy I remember that was really popping triple digits and everybody was going, oh my God, was Aroldis Chapman when he made his debut for the Cincinnati Reds out of the bullpen. What is it? 10 years ago now, something like that. That's the first guy I can remember who was like regularly going to throw 100 miles an hour, and everybody was screaming about it. After that, it became a little bit more commonplace, and certainly when Strasburg made his debut for the Nationals, we saw him flip some triple-digit pitches up there too. But now it does feel a little bit more commonplace, but with Skeens throwing 16 pitches over 100 miles an hour in the first two innings today, that's a brand new landscape is what it is. That is a brand new world for me.
It's almost just the expectation now for like a young pitcher coming up with a lot of hype. You mentioned Chapman when he first showed up on the scene and everybody was like, oh my God, this is insanity. How is he doing this time after time? And now it's notable, but you don't really have the same reaction when you see a guy coming out like a Paul Skeens, for instance, you know,
no,
hitting 100 effortlessly. It seems like it's just like, oh yeah, that's kind of what it is now. That's kind of what you have to do.
You got to hit that kind of velocity. Good luck to you. It's why strikeouts have climbed each of the last like 15 years or so. I guess I want to say, you know, the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series in 1990 and they had, you know, there's the Nasty Boys bullpen, right? Rob Dibbles chucking, I would imagine, 100 out of that. I heard tell, I mean, 1990, I'm five, right? So it's not like I have vivid memories of the Reds winning the World Series that year. But I know that there were guys who hit triple digits in decades past, right? Like, you hear Bob Gibson threw hard and Bob Feller threw hard. There were other pitchers not named Bob who probably threw just Nolan Ryan, right? Rob Dibble of it all. But we didn't have there weren't television broadcasts that flashed 100 for us, right? And I think having that, as video game-ish as this sounds, and as like new era, I guess, as this sounds, especially for, and this is, you know, again, no shade, to an older generation of baseball fans, which I know listens to the show. We appreciate your understanding of the history of this game, which we can't have because we didn't see it happen. But it now, there has been so much change just by putting those numbers, three digits, up on a screen. The way, Kevin, I think the way you and I go to evaluate pitching is different than the way a guy like Len or DJ would evaluate pitching, which is different, I think, than Steve Stone would evaluate pitching, and is also going to be different than an 18-year-old baseball fan is going to evaluate hit pitching. I would think that like a Gen Z baseball fan isn't going to be interested almost in a top prospect who doesn't have 98, 99. It's crazy.
It's kind of that flashiness aspect of it where, younger sports fans are always going to gravitate toward a guy that can throw 100 or a guy that can hit a 500-foot home run, or in basketball, a guy that can throw down, you know, crazy athletic dunks, whereas somebody, and again, not to make it, you know, an age or generational thing, but somebody who's just seen a little bit more of a variance of successful players can appreciate more of a crafty aspect, I guess, for lack of a term.
Well, and I think that's what makes being a part of what makes being a White Sox fan so cool, especially having watched them over the last 10, 15, 20 years, right, is that you've got both Mark Burley and Chris Sale as exemplars of two very different ways to be an ace, right? Burley's throwing 88 and cutters everywhere and just fading sinkers. And then you've got Chris Sale doing obviously what he did in consecutive generations of White Sox fandom, or maybe not White Sox fandom, because like one generation would have seen them all. We certainly did. But in like terms of classes of players, draft classes and whatnot, you have the wide variance there. And I know there are a lot of fan bases that can point to things like that. I don't know that there are many that in consecutive, you know, kind of generations of White Sox teams have a Burley and then a Sale, right? I it's just so close together and so different in approach.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's like I said, it's just kind of that variance of a skill set where not every pitcher is going to be a Chris Sale or, you know, Nolan Ryan, and not every hitter is going to be Mark McGwire. It takes all different kinds to make up a roster and to be successful, and it takes very different skill sets. And just because a guy tops out at 100 versus a guy that tops out at 89, you know, you mentioned Mark Burley, my favorite player ever. I was watching Mark Burley highlights last night on YouTube. You know, he barely ever hit 90.
Burley highlights.
Yeah, I was up late, just cracking into it, and he barely hit what 90, 91. But probably one of the most fun guys I've ever seen throw baseball.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Fun guy to talk with, too. I think we'll talk a little bit more about what it is to kind of make your debut as a starter later on in the show. A little sidetrack there with the note on Paul Skeens, a little bit late to a break as well. I want to hear from White Sox manager Pedro Grifol after last night's win. We played some of it on the post-game show. We'll play the entirety of it when we come back. Talked a lot about the effort last night, solid game, and the stuff from Garrett Crochet. You'll hear that on the other side of a quick break. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. We're being produced by Kevin Zipak, who was up late watching Mark Burley highlights, and Brendan Riley, who I assume was doing the same thing. I can only assume. Maybe it was Kip Wells highlights. I'm not entirely sure. I was up watching Jim Parquet highlights. That's what I was doing. That and flipping back and forth between Esteban Loaiza's All-Star Season 2, but that's neither here nor there. The White Sox and Guardians play tonight after the White Sox took last night's ball game 6-3. They won the first game of the series 3-2, and in both games, The Guardians rallied late. They had the back-to-back home runs in game number one. Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor both went yard in the eighth inning to make it a one-run ball game. And then Jose Ramirez hit a two-run shot in the eighth inning last night to make it just a little bit tighter for the White Sox. But a huge credit to Jordan Leisure in both nights. I mean, this is... I have railed against the starting pitcher win for a while now. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that wins back in the day didn't matter a little bit more. I completely understand that, right? Winning 30 like Denny McClain, or getting all of the wins that Nolan Ryan did, or Maddox did, or Jim Palmer did, right? I mean, that matters, right? It mattered then because starting pitchers stayed in the game longer, which means they dictated more of the game. Nowadays, and I think you could probably go all the way back to 2000 with this, maybe 2010 if you really wanted to be specific about it and delineate a little bit more, the pitcher win hasn't meant as much in terms of how much that pitcher necessarily affected the ball game. Guys aren't lasting as long. Guys aren't asked to last as long, which I think is a big differential here. And also, bullpens are better than they've ever been, top to bottom around Major League Baseball. Guys have dropped out of the rotation and gone into the bullpen and pumped 99 and saved games like Michael Kopech has here over the last couple of weeks. So all of that matters when it comes to pitchers' wins and losses. And when I look at the last two nights, yeah, Jordan Leisure gets the save last night, and that's all well and good. He's not in. I mean, it's a hold, I guess, for his work in the seventh inning last night. But there he is coming out of the bullpen with the bases loaded and nobody out in a 3-0 ball game. And he goes strikeout, strikeout, ground out. And the guy doesn't figure in the box score. I mean, if you look in the box score and you see Leisure, he's got an H next to his name. But when you write it down in the Bob Carpenter book, it's just the win, the loss, and the save. That kind of stuff matters a ton, especially, I mean, it always has, but in today's game, it matters more because more relievers are used and the variance between them is so much bigger. And I think over the last two games, you know, three, really, when you go back to the win against the Rays on whatever that was, Monday, I don't know what day it is now, against the Rays would have been Wednesday. Yeah. Wednesday, the 4-1 win, you got a good outing by John Brebbia that got you out of a sticky situation after Steven Wilson came in and, you know, was a little bit shaky. And Brebbia gets you nothing. He gets a hold, I guess, but not a lot else. Pedro Grifol talked last night and did, I think, a really good job of spreading the credit around for the last couple of wins, especially in last night's ball game. A lot of credit goes to Garrett Crochet, of course, for a dominant outing. The offense has picked up speed a little bit here. Some solid defense last night. A really good double play turn started by Nicky Lopez on a brutal short hop, which he gloved and was able to get over to second base for the turn. Paul DeJong making a really good throw over to first base as well. That double play helps the White Sox smooth out the later part of that game after Travis Freeman had hit a home run to lead off that seventh inning. So all of that went into it last night, and Pedro Grifol addressed a lot of it after the W for the Sox yesterday evening.
I thought Lee did a really good job with Crochet. They prepared well, put down the right fingers, they were setting up hitters the way they had planned it. Crochet's slider was really good. He ended up, 11 strikeouts, zero walks, which is unbelievably impressive. The way he keeps pounding the strike zone with four pitches. And we need not to forget, you know, this is his first time starting. You know, this is the first time he started in pro ball was in the big league. So what he's doing is it's really, really incredible, and a credit to him of the mindset that he had coming in and the work that he put in the offseason to be able to do what he's doing. He got himself in a little trouble there in the third with a leadoff triple, and then KK in a 5-3. Again, good mound visit by Corey after those two strikeouts just to make sure he stays focused. Again, got in a little trouble there in the sixth, two outs, first and third, and then made some really good pitches to Luriano to strike him out. Wilson came in the seventh, gave him an HR, a walk, struck out a guy, we had a pinch hitter, brought in Banks, did a great job on a really good double play by Nicky, and DJ, that was probably the defensive play of the game there. And then the eighth, we had a double by Fry. Ramirez, you know, stays hot. It seems like every time I see him, he's hot. Hit that home run and, Big out by Banks on Naylor and brought in Leisure and a four-out save. On the offensive side, we got some action there in the fifth with Lee and DJ, which I don't know. I heard it was called a hit. You know, that's a double in my mind. He dove for that ball, and the ball got by him. And really good base running by Lee, and I'll call it a double. And then we're going on contact there, and you know, we were fortunate on that ball to the second baseman, scored a couple runs. Really good base running by Nicky to get to second base, and then we hit some homers in the seventh and the eighth. You know, Lee and DJ, and then Vonnie gave us a little cushion there in the eighth, and Leisure did a really, really good job. You know, a four-out save, pitching and defense today. You know, was the key to this ball game, and tacking on runs was really critical too. You know, that middle of the order there is pretty tough, especially late in the game. You know, these guys, not only do they hit, you know, but they hit late in the game. You know, seventh inning on, they're tough, and they give really good at bats. So you got to be prepared for that. And I thought Banks did a really good job getting a critical out with Naylor, and obviously, you know, Leisure did a really good job of shutting the door.
Yeah. Just
that's a good question. I don't think there's a blueprint in baseball to what, you know. I know what I'm seeing. You know, he's stronger, and I know what I'm reading, you know, from our people, and he's getting stronger, and I know what he's saying, which is really important. His body feels good. He feels strong. But I don't think there's a blueprint on this one. I mean, I really don't. I mean, we're just going to have to go on, you know, signs and resources that we have, and in communication with him, and you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, every opportunity we get to give him an extra day, we will. And you know, like I said, at times we'll short start him. Today wasn't that day. You know, today we were a little thin in the bullpen. You know, and so today, you know, he picked us up big time. You know, I really don't think anybody did, probably except him, you know, and that's the credit, you know, that I give him. You know, he wanted to do this, and he was hell-bent on doing it, you know, mentally and physically. So he's got talent, and he's got the right mindset for it. So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but right now it's going pretty damn good. I mean, I like to see him out there every 5-6 days.
What's the difference between Corey Lee making the adjustment that he made during the offseason and continuing to put the work into to make sure it stays consistent?
I actually think getting his ass kicked last year for the last month and a half really benefited him, because he's a tough kid, and he learned a lot, right? And you know, that's one of the advantages of being able to do that. You know, you bring a kid up here, you throw him into the fire, and you know, if he does well, good. If he doesn't, well, what do we learn, right? And I think knowing him, the mindset that he's got, and how strong mentally he is, you know, he went home and worked on the things that he knows deep down gave him some trouble, you know. And and the mind is a big deal in this game, you know, the confidence, the mind. And he came back a different guy. He's extremely talented, but now he's proven to everybody that he's extremely tough mentally. And you know, the thing that we gotta understand here is that, you know, he's still developing here, right? And you know, at times you want to just throw him out there every day, but that's not the right thing to do either. You know, there's a process to this thing. So you know, we'll continue to, you know, to look at, you know, when we want him to play, how much we want him to play, and you know, graduate him little by little. And you know, we also got Maldi that catches a hell of a ball game, man, and calls a hell of a ball game. So right now, we're really happy with what we got behind the plate.
With Garrett, when a guy's in the strike zone as much as he is tonight, and teams still can't get good contact on him, what does it say about the quality of the stuff when he's in that defined area and they still can't hit him?
Well, hitting is tough as it is, but when you got a guy who's 6'6 out there throwing upper 90s with four pitch mix, maybe a five pitch mix, you know, and you know, they majority of the time they got a lot of right-handed hitters in there, you know, and you got you got stuff boring in on you, and then you got changeups and two-seamers, you know, running away from the barrel, you know, that's a big deal, you know, and it's tough to hit. Remember, he's not throwing an average fastball out there. He's throwing a plus-plus fastball at times an eight fastball. So, you know, he started the game off today, and I was looking at the board, and he was 90, 95, 96, and then all of a sudden gets in a little trouble. He's 98. You know, and his cutter's 92, 94. So he threw some crucial changeups in really tough situations where, you know, he bore some cutters in there on right-handed hitters and some fastballs in, and then set up the changeup perfectly. And that's what I mean about Corey Lee. You know, him and Corey were together today. They were on. The interesting thing about is that Maldonado caught him last time. You know, I've never been one to pair up guys, you know, throughout the year. You know, I mean, okay, you're going to catch this guy. And I want these guys to get comfortable with each other. Just in case something happens, you know, we can't have that built-in excuse, which we won't have. You know, no excuses around here. So, and he did it with Maldonado last time, and he did it with Corey Lee this time. And, you know, we'll continue to pair him up as we see fit. Good.
Droger Fall after last night's win against the Guardians, and I think he put, in the last couple of minutes there, he put down something that I was trying to express earlier in the show, and Pedro said it better than I did. This is a guy learning how to start at the major leagues, and he's got four or five pitches. He's learning those four or five pitches, and also has them at the same time. It almost shouldn't be happening that way. Garrett Crochet having those four to five pitches after having been a reliever for two seasons. I mean, like, I understand, and I think you do too, that relievers in the bullpen, right, who are two-pitch guys, right, fastball, slider, they have more than those pitches, right? Take Michael Kopech, for example, just as the example of a guy who had been a starter and now moved to the bullpen. You know as well as I do that Michael had been throwing both a changeup and a curveball at points as a starter. That those pitches were experiments and things he was working around with and all that other kind of stuff. And now Michael's throwing a cutter and the fastball and a bit of a slider as well, right? Pitch mixes change. For Crochet to not have been a starter since his sophomore year at Tennessee and now doing that at the big league level with zero, and I mean zero, minor league run-up, to understand how that pitch mix needs to work against a given 1-9 is wild to me. It is absolutely crazy and something that every fifth day we White Sox fans get to watch and go, well, isn't this something else? You know, it just really has been, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. This is White Sox Weekly. And when we come back, we'll stay on the pitching side of things for just a little bit. I had a chance to talk with Jordan Leisure prior to yesterday's ballgame about the escape he made out of a bases-loaded situation. The guy was a willing participant, really interesting to talk with, and he steps you through the mindset of a reliever in the pen while the situation is getting worse out there on the field, and understanding that you've got to come into the toughest spot you can come into in a ball game. You'll hear that when we come back. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network, I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Guardians coming up tonight. Mike Clevinger against Tristan McKenzie, the starters this evening. The Sox have won three in a row. They are now 11-28 on the year. The Guardians now hold just a half-game lead in the American League Central. They're 24-15, courtesy of the White Sox taking the last two and hopefully taking this series with a win tonight and maybe even a four-game sweep on Sunday. A guy can dream, right? Join us on June 8th for Sox Crawl, Taste of the Sox, presented by Vizzy Hard Seltzer. Enjoy an exclusive pregame crawl inside the stadium with food and drink specials, a sneak peek of new unique offerings, entertainment, and more. Plus, receive a Hawaiian shirt presented by Beggar's Pizza. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/soxcrawl. We've got a beautiful day at the ballpark today. A little bit of wind moving from left to right. Ballpark should open to fans here shortly. It's nice and sunny. It is just a couple of clouds moving through. And right now, we've got it at 63, something like that. It'll cool down a little bit this evening, but for Mother's Day tomorrow, I'm sure you've seen the forecast, 78, maybe even 80. That's a perfect day for a ball game, in my opinion. And we've got one for you here on the South Side, both tonight and tomorrow afternoon. I encourage you to come hang out with us. Yesterday, before the pregame show, I had a chance to talk with right-handed rookie reliever Jordan Leisher. Because the night before that, he got out of bases loaded, nobody out jam, with the White Sox up just 3-0 in that game. Then last night, and you'll hear him say this in the interview we had yesterday, he said he's feeling loose, feeling free, ready to go again, the whole thing. Last night, 4 outs to get save number 2 on his big league season. If you missed it, and I'll bring it up to you one more time if, in case you missed it during the pregame show yesterday, MLB.com, and here I am having closed the window on my computer. Goodness gracious. MLB.com had a list of future closers for each team. They kind of went through the system, and whether it's a guy on the major league roster or whether it's somebody in that system or something like that, they picked up a future closer, a reliever that's got that kind of chance to do it. And for the White Sox, Jordan Leisher was that guy, which I thought, that makes a lot of sense, right? Here's what the write-up on MLB.com has to say. The Dodgers helped Leisure upgrade his stuff after taking him in the 14th round in 2021 at the NCAA Division II Tampa, then included him in the Lance Lynn-Joe Kelly trade with the White Sox last July. You knew all that. Armed with an upper 90s fastball and an upper 80s slider that come out of a low release height with a lot of extension, he's been the White Sox best reliever this spring, a 2.57 ERA, 9 strikeouts and 14 innings as a rookie. That was the potential future closers, one for each team. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I think, too, you meld all this in with the fact that Leisure, over his first 17 outings, has allowed earned runs in exactly 3 of them. He has, as you'll hear coming up, a really good head on his shoulders to understand the situations he's coming into and thinking through them. That impressed me quite a bit in talking with him yesterday. And also the scouting pedigree, right? The scouting report that comes with the upper 90s and the slider he's got. So here was the conversation I had with Jordan Leisure in the pregame show yesterday.
Honestly, it can be a little overwhelming, but I just look at it one pitch at a time. Trying to do what I can to either get a ground ball and get a quick 2 outs or get a punch out. And luckily, my body felt great. The ball felt great coming out of my hand, and I was able to get some swings and misses. So it worked out, but really just focused on one pitch at a time.
On the broadcast, it's easy to focus on you kind of entering that moment, but you're warming up in that bullpen, and you're watching, Fetty give up really soft singles and watching those bases loading up, knowing that your spot is getting a little tougher as you go.
Yeah.
How do you put that out of your mind as you get ready?
I kind of keep it in my mind, honestly. So I follow the game. I know I knew when I was warming up that they were going to go to me next. And so after the first hit, I was getting ready for the guy that was coming up next, working on my slide steps, working on what pitches I was going to throw to him. He got a hit, so then my focus was to the next guy. And then after the third hit, bases loaded. I knew who was coming up. I knew what I wanted to do to him. And then just focused on making pitches. So I was fully prepared for every guy that was coming up that inning.
Is that kind of the same mindset as you get that first strikeout? Okay, one through, next guy, here we go, kind of same approach?
Yeah, kind of after the first guy, the first strikeout, I knew who was coming up next. I'd seen him in Cleveland before struck him out there, so I knew how I could get him out, but really just focused on one pitch at a time. I was honestly trying to get early contact. When Pedro gave me the ball, he said, minimize damage, so I wasn't really thinking about trying to make the big pitch, more just one pitch at a time, get soft contact, and it worked out. I was able to get in a good counts and get some strikeouts.
You get the grounder to get out of it. I saw Fetty at the top step waiting for you. As best you can, what got said between the two of you?
He just said, thank you so much. He gave me a big hug. It's nothing has to be said. Obviously those are his runs. I have no interest in cashing those in whatsoever. And I would want, if I was in his shoes, the guy to come in after me to do the same thing. And, I got his back. He'll have mine. all the guys in the bullpen will have my back. So it's kind of just like being part of a team. You know, you want to step up for the next guy.
Jordan, appreciate it. Good luck again tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's White Sox reliever Jordan Leisure, who was our guest on the pregame show yesterday. We thank him for his time, both yesterday and today, I guess. I was really impressed. I should have expected a response like this. You know, you kind of go into your interview cliches, hey, just keep one at a time, that kind of thing. But the way he kind of delved into, the situation's changing, so I have to practice different things, right? Guy gets on, okay, slide step, here are the pitches I'm going to attack this guy with. Oh, he got on too. All right. Approach changes here. You got to check over the shoulder at second base, and then you're looking at the pitches you're going to get this next guy out with in the bullpen. That's what they're for. You know, he's not out there throwing one everything. He's out there working on a sequence even that's going to get this next hitter out. He mentioned the let me flip the page in the book here. He mentioned the strikeout he got against the second hitter, Florial. It's a guy that he faced earlier in that series against the Guardians during the whole solar eclipse thing. So he gets to go back through the book. You know, a little bit of luck, sure. You get to face a hitter that you've seen before. That tends to help, at least, you know, having some familiarity with him. But also, you've got to come in there and understand that while the situation's changing, you can't let the water rise above your eyes, right? You've got to make sure that you're staying cool and calm and level and understand it all. And the White Sox have turned to Jordan Leisure in a lot of high-leverage situations so far this year, to both test him and let him grow and develop and win ball games like they have the last two nights with Jordan Leisure working out of the pen. Now, I would guess that even though Leisure's young and feeling great, that he's probably down for the ball game today. I'm only guessing because he's worked in the last 2 days, but who knows? The real situation here for tonight's ball game is going to be what Mike Clevinger is able to give the White Sox as a starter tonight. We'll talk about that when we come back. We still have the interview with Brian Ramos coming up in just a little bit. We'll play that for you at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. And we've got the ball game tonight as well, White Sox and Guardians, with a pregame show starting at 5:30 this evening. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Join us at the ballpark tomorrow for Family Sundays presented by Coke Zero Sugar. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy kids run the bases postgame, character artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Tonight, Saturday night, White Sox will try for a series win against these Guardians. They took the first two. Last night, 6-3. Night before that, 3-2. Mike Clevinger and Tristan McKenzie are the starters in the ballgame this evening. Now, Mike Clevinger made a season debut earlier this year. His last start, in fact, 5 days ago. It did not go well, unfortunately, for Clevinger. He went 2-plus innings. The command and control and the stuff just really wasn't there. He had one whiff on, I think, 24 or 22 fastballs thrown, and the one whiff he got was on one of those fastballs. It looked like he had some rust to knock off, quite frankly. And last year, the performance that he was able to put up, I mean, he was one of the White Sox most steady starters last season, and I would imagine a big part of the reason they brought him back was to get some of that performance back, get you a few more innings in this White Sox rotation as well, and perhaps, of course, be a guy that you may be able to move for future assets. I mean, it is no secret that that's where the White Sox are setting their targeting reticle at this point. The trade of Robbie Grossman is evidence of that, if nothing else. Now, I do think what's also interesting here and difficult for the White Sox is managing the number of innings that you've got to get out of just the rest of the season. I'm not even talking about starters at this point. There are, and I'm not going to do the math because I'm not allowed to do math while talking, there are X amount of innings left in the 2024 season, and they've got to be handled by a certain number of pitchers. With Garrett Crochet, as you heard Pedro Grifol kind of describe it just a few minutes ago here on White Sox Weekly, with Garrett Crochet being just kind of an unprecedented situation, a situation without a roadmap is kind of the way Pedro put it. You know, he's a first-time starter. He's not done this a lot. He is approaching a career high in major league innings quickly and will obviously eclipse that at some point here very, very soon and then continue to throw. You don't know when Garrett's body may just say, that'll do it, and it's been a really great start to my major league starting career. But for the best of everybody, we may have to shut this down now, or at maybe even go into a relief role or whatever, you know, some other weird way you might solve that conundrum. Whatever it is, it's going to be fewer innings for the White Sox in that rotation. So to bring in a veteran like Clevinger to manage the, you know, kind of near-term innings load makes some sense, especially when you look at the starts that Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon were able to give you while they were up here making a couple of starts. Nastrini made two and Cannon made one. Obviously, Nastrini's first was a good one. His second was rough. For Cannon, a very good first start, a rough second start, and an okay third start. Both of them back down at AAA Charlotte. We'll talk about how those guys are doing a little bit later in the show. But Nick Nastrini had a really good start last time out after a couple of rough ones at AAA. And again, you know, the other thing too that I always bring up when we talk about pitching prospects for the White Sox at AAA Charlotte is when you look through the box score lines, when you look through the pitching lines for guys at the end of the night, don't scout the stat line. You know, Charlotte is a bandbox. It's an absolute launching pad, and it is really difficult to just go ahead and say, well, the home run rate is this for this pitcher, and therefore it's not going to work at the bigs. And it's just not the case. Davis Martin is a great case study in this. The numbers at Double A in Birmingham were very good. He was moved up to Charlotte. They got not good, and then pitched at the big league level and was better than his numbers in Charlotte. And if you take out the last start of the year that Davis Martin made before, you know, unfortunately Tommy John and elbow issues kind of set in, really good numbers for Davis Martin. So if you need a proof point, there's one. And I think the White Sox could have several more proof points as we go. Now, one other variable here that I'll be very interested to see solved, and I don't think we will for a couple of months yet, is whether or not the White Sox are willing and that the player is able to move from AA to AAA. Because as you talk about having to, you know, fill out all of these innings and get starts out of X amount of players and do all of this stuff, the White Sox are also quite obviously balancing development. This. And while Nastrini and Cannon, as I mentioned before, have made some starts up here at the big league level, there are two other pitchers, both of them secured by the White Sox in the trade for Dylan, the trade that sent Dylan Cease to the Padres, in Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte, that White Sox general manager Chris Getz has said, yeah, could see big league time as soon as this season. I know I've mentioned Thorpe before, especially in this context, having been a guy that the Padres were openly kind of considering to be a starter in their rotation this year. Thorpe's at AA now and dominating. Iriarte is at AA now and dominating. So those guys, I wonder, could they make the jump from AA to MLB? It is not unheard of. It's not totally uncommon. In fact, the White Sox have a guy who right now is going to play third base tonight, jumping from AA to the major leagues. Obviously, it's different when you're talking about pitchers against position players, but at least there are some congruent issues here that you can kind of go, yeah, all right, you could see it happening. But all mixed into that is, of course, the trouble spot that AAA Charlotte can be for pitchers, right? Just based on the environment, right? You're playing basically at sea level and the ball absolutely launches out of there. It's a really difficult environment to pitch in. I actually asked Chris Getz at his, I don't know if it was his last media availability, because he spoke just a little bit on the road when Luis Robert was announced to have had a little bit of a setback in his injury recovery. We'll talk about that as we go later on in the show too. But I asked, you know, are you philosophically opposed to bringing a pitcher up from AA to the major leagues? And he said, I think it was a fair response, you know, it's a case-by-case basis. And that it's something that we're not necessarily afraid of. I'm paraphrasing here, so give me a little license. Not necessarily afraid of, but would want to make sure that the situation is right and the player's in the right spot in terms of innings thrown at that point in the season. And two, and I can completely understand that. All that to say, I wouldn't rule out Drew Thorpe or Jairo Iriarte making their MLB debut in 2024. Both of them are pitching incredibly well. It's not just the stat line for them, but the numbers on the fastballs and changeups and sliders for Iriarte are really good. And the same for Thorpe. And there's also a question that's coming around here that's been brought into the forefront with Paul Skenes making his debut for Pittsburgh today, the top pitching prospect in all of baseball, making his debut for the Pirates. His day is done, by the way. We'll talk a bit about it in a little bit here. There's always a question about how many bullets you've got, right? How many pitches do you have before some sort of injury sets in and sets you back, whether that's Tommy John or a shoulder or anything like that? The state of pitching in Major League Baseball now is so tenuous. We have had so many top-tier starters go down with long-term injuries this season, and others still will, and others will still go down with less long-term issues, but still issues that will cost playoff teams starts from top-tier starters or cost those starters playoff starts themselves, right? That's just the way we navigate baseball in 2024 is in part through understanding that pitchers are going to get hurt. And that, quite frankly, excuse it, but it sucks. It's a tough way to have to watch the sport you love, but it's the fact of the matter now. It's why when you look at the White Sox system and when you kind of evaluate, or I should say read from evaluators of prospect systems about the White Sox, is they've stocked a lot of really interesting arms up and down the minor leagues. And I think having that kind of number, that bulk, right? Quantity is a quality all its own. And being able to have that number of intriguing pitching prospects means that you've got another one, right? I hate to be so crass with it because after all, these are, you know, real people and real careers, and you know, we watch them on a nightly basis, but at some level, you know, you've got to have a next guy up mentality, and having that next guy is part of feeling good about that mentality. So, you know, in terms of at least building that system, that's something you've got to think about. You know, it's a hopefully a somewhat interesting way of kind of chaining Mike Clevenger's first start of the year, where he only goes two innings, to what's expected of him in this start, as he's trying to knock the rust off of, you know, a zero spring training and work back into a major league rotation, and what the long-term future for Mike Clevenger, either here or with another team, should he get traded, really is, and how that affects the rest of your rotation, whether it be here at the bigs or at AAA and all the way down to AA. I think it's all going to be, it all definitely is something that the White Sox are pondering on a daily basis, if not, you know, a start-by-start basis for each one of those pitchers. 312-332-3776, that's the phone number. When we come back, the debut of the season, Paul Skenes, is done. We'll get you the line score, and I've got a couple of thoughts about Skenes and the state of pitching around baseball, which we just talked about a little bit too, but I also want to spend a bit of time reminiscing with a friend about a debut that we were both at here at 35th and Shields not all that long ago, and just kind of think about what a starting pitching debut gets to do for a fan base. We've seen a couple here already, and hopefully get to see a couple more in the near future. I'm Connor McKnight. We got the White Sox and Guardians coming up tonight as well, but more White Sox Weeklies next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Start your game day with a pregame patio party. 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat and drink buffet starting at just $63 per person. It is the best value in the ballpark for food, fun, and excitement. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. The debut of the season is over. Paul Skenes is out of the ballgame for the Pirates. That is it's a wild one. I'll tell you about it in just a second. But I've got some numbers on Skenes, a final line score. Actually, this is a tweet from our friend Jesse Rogers at ESPN. Paul Skenes went 4-plus innings, allowing 6 hits and 2 walks to go along with 7 strikeouts. 17 pitches, went for 100 miles an hour or more, the third most in an MLB debut. Here are the breakdown of those 17 pitches over 100. This is all from Jesse's tweet. 7 balls, 5 fouls, 4 swinging strikes, 1 in play, 9 of the 17 came with two strikes. That's all from ESPN Stats and Info and our friend Jesse Rogers. That game, as it were, is tied at 6 and in a delay. Did it start raining? I guess it maybe started raining in Pittsburgh. It says delay. Maybe it's an injury delay. I haven't seen. Nope, there's rain. There's rain in Pittsburgh, and that game is now under delay. Wow. So there's another. This will be fun. Get to tie this into something that we were going to talk about anyway here. Then the pitcher who came in for Paul Skeens was Kyle Nicholas. And Kyle, unfortunately for him, threw 12 consecutive pitches outside of the strike zone. And then on his 13th, hit Ian Happ of the Cubs. And they have come back to tie this game at 6 with a 5-run fifth inning. Skeens gets charged with 3 earned runs. He gave up 2 base runners in the fifth before getting an out. And I want to – there's pitching prospects, there's the debut, and then there's the performance, right? And I would guess that just because of the world we live in and the hype that got created around Paul Skeens, he's the fastest first overall draft pick to reach the major leagues in the last 30 years, right? So I would bet that he's got some haters, that there are probably some Paul Skeens truthers out there saying, he just throws 100, he didn't have it, all that other kind of stuff. I promise you that's not what's happening here. I promise you that this is a pitching prospect of such high regard that he may well be one of the best pitchers in baseball going within 3 or 4 starts. It's all there for him, despite what was obviously a interesting, fun to watch, but not exactly a winning debut, right? I think what's maybe more important for today, like the biggest story in baseball, one of the biggest stories in the first month and a half, 2 months of baseball, Paul Skeens making his debut, is just kind of thinking about how much fun it is to bring that heralded next prospect up into the bigs. And it's even cooler when it's a starting pitcher, right? Because you know the day it's going to happen. Because if, and Brian Ramos has been on a great run, and you're going to hear from him at 5 o'clock, right? He had a 5-game hitting streak snapped. If a position player comes up and takes an 0-for-4, then it happens, right? Even the best hitters have an 0-for-4 with 2 punch-outs these days. Even the best hitters have days where they've completely lost the plate or get, you know, run up against a buzzsaw and some starter who just really has it working. It's not as fun as when your guy is out there as a starter. And as it happens, Kevin Zipak, who's producing the show today, you've heard him a couple of times already, he and I went to, years ago, the Michael Kopech debut here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And I can remember, Kevin, I will vividly remember being in the right field corner right around the Craft Cave. I don't think it was called that then. But just how electric the atmosphere was, rainy though the weather was, for the Michael Kopech debut. It was awesome to have been here for that, even though the ball game and the rain, and now Skeens and he have that in common, although the rain didn't come down when Skeens was actually pitching, it did for Kopech. But it was one hell of a night.
No, it was very exciting, very fun, despite the weather, like you said. I tend to gravitate more toward excitement over starting pitching than anything else, and there's not really another feeling that I enjoy like seeing a young starting pitcher make his debut with all this potential. And while Garrett Crochet is not making his debut this season, I think, you know, he's giving sort of those same vibes.
Yeah.
Whenever he's out there, it's palpable. And he's already, when he's on, there are not many guys, you know, that can do the things that he does. Watching that game last night was a real treat. And when you can get that sort of excitement from a young starting pitcher who has all of the tools, there's really not anything for me that compares to that.
It's such, baseball's a team sport with individual, you know, accomplishments dictating the outcome for the team, right? I mean, it's you can't be, I mean, look no further than Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, who are on the same team for several years, going absolutely nowhere in the playoffs. Hitters don't affect the game in the way that starting pitching does, or at least can. And I think you're absolutely right to point out that, like, when that young top-tier starter comes up and makes his debut, you get to dream about that game one playoff start, right? You get to think about what Pirates fans right now are thinking. Well, four innings, three runs, and seven strikeouts isn't great, but did you see that stuff? And can you imagine what that would look like in a playoff game and how dominant that's all going to be? Those are the things that you get to think about when that guy makes his debut on the mound. And I felt it in the ballpark here years ago when Kopech made his debut. And I can't wait to feel it again. You know, that kind of run is great. And I don't think you get that every, I mean, just by virtue of a pitcher debuting and then the team's good and all that other kind of stuff, you don't get that next guy coming through. Certainly not at the level that Skeens is at or Kopech was then or Strasburg was in 2010. I mean, it's a cool day. It really is. It's a cool day in and around baseball, and it was kind of fun to be able to watch it during the show here this afternoon. On the other side, speaking of debuts, Brian Ramos, who has done nothing but earn himself more playing time, and he will start at third base tonight for the White Sox, bat six behind Andrew Benintendi and in front of Paul DeJong. Got a chance to talk with Brian earlier yesterday. We sat down in the dugout, had a good conversation about what life is like in the bigs, finding good Cuban food here in Chicago. Also, his call up to the big leagues. He'll tell you about it, but Brian Ramos was pulled off the field at AA Birmingham, and for a moment, he thought he'd done something wrong. But no, he hadn't. In fact, he was just being called to the bigs. And the White Sox wanted him right then and right there, which you can understand given the performance over the last week or so. Ramos is going to start today at third, and you will hear his first interview on White Sox Weekly when we come back. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000's Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Guardians tonight. Our pregame show is coming up 27 minutes from now. We'll start that at 5:30. You should be here on Friday, June 28th, to see country music artist Jordan Davis perform a postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola after the White Sox take on the Rockies at 6:10 p.m. Don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field dirt passes are on sale now with limited availability. To buy field passes, visit WhiteSox.com/concert. I've seen the promo reels for that show for Jordan Davis here at the ballpark on the big screen up in center field. That looks like it's going to be an electric time. Guy's got a ton of energy, and I hear the songs are good, too. I'm not much of a country guy myself, but I walk around the clubhouse. I've heard his stuff. Pretty decent. Be a fun time on June 28th. White Sox third baseman Brian Ramos, who has hit the big leagues and hit it running, just had a five-game hitting streak snapped last night, was my guest yesterday in the White Sox dugout. I guess I was his guest in the dugout. That's his space, after all. But he's our guest here on White Sox Weekly. So in just 10 seconds, we'll bring you that. We're going to pause it here for station identification. So here it is, my first question to Brian Ramos. So sitting down with White Sox third baseman Brian Ramos, who has been in the big leagues for almost a week now, and the energy you've got and the enthusiasm you've got for being here is pretty noticeable. I mean, this is pretty great up here.
I mean, yeah, like you say, this is pretty big leagues. It's something every player dream about it since they start playing baseball. And now I'm here, and I'm enjoying every moment.
Tell me a little bit about you getting the call to the big leagues. I know you guys were on the field in Birmingham, and you had to be called off the field by Sergio Santos and didn't find out right away that it was because you were going to the show.
Yeah, that was kind of funny because that was a tight game, and the old manager, he called time, and he said, "Yo, you out." I say, "Well, what's wrong here?" And then he said, "I'm going to talk to you after the game." I say, okay, but then in the moment, I don't get it. But when you sit down and you, like, thinking about it, I say, I probably will get a chance because I'm not doing anything wrong. So when we won that game, and then we get to the clubhouse, and the manager was talking with us about great win, guys, good job, and this and that. And but I got a new, and then everybody just take quiet, and then when he said, "Oh, if I must go to the show," everybody just was jumping, and they was like pretty happy and like same happy as me.
Everybody getting on you for going to the show and celebrating you is one thing, but from what I've read, that really speaks to the way you kind of operate in a clubhouse, that you're the kind of guy that draws a lot of teammates to you and is a really great source of energy. Do you go after that? Is that a role that you take pride in?
I mean, yeah, sure. I want to, be a good teammate, be a good guy, around the clubhouse. No matter if I'm playing baseball or outside, it's the same. And, yeah, I think I've been, kind of having fun with everybody, and I can say I got a good relationship with everybody on the team. And we spend, not even with the Latin, because I got, too many American friends. Because, because I can speak, and then, we can, communicate the right way. We don't gotta, we don't have to, have somebody, in front. We can just talk with, for ourselves, and then I think, that's a good kid.
Tell me about 2023, last year. I know it started, with a hamstring injury for you that set you back maybe, 2 months or so. And it was a bit of a struggle getting out of the gate. What was that, a learning process for you? What kind of things did you have to tell yourself and learn kind of on the way to get back to being you and being healthy?
I mean, yeah, last year I got an injury, was kind of hip flexor or something like that. And then, I start, you're talking about I'm going to start low, kind of slow this year.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, I knew it, this sport is not that easy. So you don't want to be on top every time, so you gotta just come to the same mindset to the field every time, no matter if you're doing good or you're doing bad, because in the end of the day, when you put the work on, that's gonna pay off. So I knew it in the beginning. I said, I'm kind of struggling right now, but I know at some point I'm gonna get back to my rhythm. I know I can do the adjustment, and I can hit the ball. So I just take positive and came to the field with the same mindset. And yeah, here we are.
Coaches have described you as an aggressive hitter, but you've talked a lot about your work trying to go the other way as well. You got the base hit past second base the other night in Tampa, drove home a run. How do you work that balance, knowing that you're going to get home runs, you pull the ball a little bit, but going the other way is an important skill set to have too?
Yeah, I like to, you got to play with the situation.
Yeah.
We got a man in second, and that is no out, so you want to do whatever it takes to get the running to third. So for me, that was for Lucky, I get a base hit, but I was trying to, just move the running no matter what. But if I get, a base hit, that's even better.
So this is, we're talking on Friday before our show on Saturday when you're listening to this. So you've been in Chicago all of 2 days now.
Yeah.
Have you found some good food to eat? Have people told you the right places to go? Do you feel good about what your plan is here?
I don't wear any place yet, but I hear something from the guys. They got a couple places here. They got a good food, and I'm going to try it pretty soon.
Okay, good. Excellent. You've also, you've got some teammates who are from where you're from, who understand where they need to go to get food from home if you're feeling like that a little bit. What is your favorite dish from home? What's your go-to?
I would say rice, bean, steak, plantain, avocado. Yeah, that's kind of typical Cuban food. I would love to get that here.
I feel like one of the things that we as Americans don't understand is how good plantains are in everything. I've had them as bread for sandwiches. It's incredible.
It's really good. We miss it with rice. I don't know if you guys do that, but when you put it all together, it tastes really good.
Third base is you've talked about, is wanting to be your home. You love that position. You like playing there. What about third base intrigues you the most? Is it the challenge? Is it just kind of being involved in every play? And how big is your focus on your defense right now?
So, third base is my favorite base, I would say, because I've been playing third base since I'm little kid. So now growing up, I've been taking knowing more about the base, and I like it because it's just that's the hard corner, just reaction. You got too many action. The backhand plays that throw is long, so that when you get a ball over there, you can make a really nice play. And I've been working on my defense things since a long time ago, and I keep doing it because I want to be complete as a game as I can in my game. So yeah, I think defense is sport, is a part, important part of the game.
Okay, so we're on the radio, so I got to tell people that when you said been working on your defense, you hopped your feet a little bit. I would guess that's because defense is footwork, right? I mean, that's such a huge part.
I mean, yeah, you gotta work a lot with the foot, you know, because it's just like I say, reaction. You know, you gotta be quick. So I wanna be complete as I can. If I can hit the ball hard and I can play a really good defense, I would take it away.
Who's your favorite player growing up?
I would say the David Ortiz, Big Papi. Yeah, that's one of my favorite. The way he played the game, like his swag, you know, when he hit a homer, kind of, you know, like he's saying, like he showed to the people, like kind of, I'm the guy here, you know. Yeah, but he's like one of my favorite players growing up.
I thought it was hilarious when you said after the ball game, it was in Tampa, you had the double, and you said with two push-ups away from the home run.
In the beginning, I hit the ball. I just start running, but then when I was around first, I saw the ball like just kind of flying. I say, "Go, ball!" But then that was against the wall, and then like you say, with two more push-up, that's a homer.
You're gonna get your first one soon here. I wouldn't be surprised if you do it tonight. But do you have some like Big Papi flair in you when you go long? Is that kind of what the plan is?
No, not really. I just like him as a player, but I don't wanna, you know, everybody got his same, you know, I would say his same flow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to try to be nobody, but I would say he's one of my favorite player growing up. Yeah, he's a good hitter.
What's the clubhouse like right now? You guys are playing a lot better baseball, really, since you've come up. I mean, this team looks like it's moving in the right direction at this point. What's your focus off the field with the guys right now?
I mean, the clubhouse right now is happy. You know, everybody's happy. We jogging around, you know, we got music, it's fun over there. And off the field with the guys, I've been knowing most of those guys since like probably 2-3 years ago, and probably we got, you know, a good relationship. And then it's fun. We do stuff together, and then I think we got a pretty fun group here.
Do you take a little bit of time for yourself to think about what could be for you in the next couple weeks, couple months, or is this very much a day at a time kind of thing, knowing that you came up from Double A the way you did?
Yeah, sure. I don't think out the ball, you know. I just wanna keep doing what I'm doing, and whatever they think that's gonna be the best for me in the couple weeks or whatever, they know what they're doing, you know. Yeah, my job is play baseball, and their job is the, you know, everybody got a role here, so I don't want to think out the box. I just want to stay focused on what I'm doing right now and keep playing the way I'm playing.
You've been really good at your job over the last week, Brian, so congratulations. And a White Sox fans are really happy watching you.
Yeah, thank you, man. I just this is something I've been dreaming since I'm like 14 years old. I left Cuba and trying to find a ability team to sign me in Dominican, and now I made it, and now I'm here and doing this. That's something that I'm never gonna forget.
Congratulations. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
That's Brian Ramos, and a journey that is not over yet. Nowhere close. Just his first six games in the bigs. They've all been a lot of fun to watch. A huge thanks to Brian for hopping on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, actually, White Sox manager Pedro Grifol just wrapped up his session with reporters and talked a bit about Ramos, and I'll tell you what he said when we come back. You also can put your socks and sneakers to the test. Join us at Guaranteed Rate Field on Saturday, June 22nd, for our annual White Sox 5K presented by Illinois Corn Growers Association. Racers will cross the finish line on field, then head up to the concourse for a post-race party. All net proceeds benefit White Sox charities. Register today at whitesox.com/run. I'll get you the latest on Brian Ramos from White Sox manager Pedro Grifol on the other side of a quick break. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Guardians coming up at 6:10 tonight. Our pregame show coming up in just a couple of minutes. Call it 10 minutes. We'll be up at 3:30 or 5:30 for that one. 312-332-3776. Still a little bit of time to sneak a phone call in here. But we just got done playing our interview with Brian Ramos, White Sox third baseman. His first time joining us here on White Sox Weekly. It was a blast talking to him, and he's having an absolute blast playing Major League Baseball. Pedro Grifol just spoke to White Sox beat reporters about Ramos in his pregame media session, and I'll read you the tweet that Scott Merkin of MLB.com put up there. Obviously, I'm here doing the show, not in the dugout, and so we thank Scott Merkin for relaying the words. Grifol on Ramos, staying when Mendick returns. Quote, "He's got to continue to play. This is a long haul. He's doing really well right now. We're taking it day by day with him. We're not going to be quick to evaluate, okay, he's staying for the whole year, or he's going down." That's the end of the quote. Not a lot given away there, for sure. Of course, if the White Sox had a predetermined plan for Brian Ramos, two things could be true. One, he's playing way better than they thought, and that means that plans have to change. Or the White Sox do have a plan to send him down to the minor leagues, perhaps AAA Charlotte. He came up from AA Birmingham, after all, because of roster crunch being what roster crunch is. And they can take this 10-day run, or however long it's going to be, Danny Mendick on the 10-day IL, and that would, you presume, be the roster move that precipitates needing to do something if with Brian Ramos or somebody else that sends him off the big league roster. You would think that maybe you wouldn't say, yes, he's going down to AAA, and we talked to him about it, because you don't want him to have to play with that hanging over his head. Now, that's all that said, having talked with Brian yesterday, I almost get the sense, not maybe I'm inflating an interview, and you know, he is, after all, an athlete who's got a desire, a want, a need to be here at the big league level and succeed and produce, right? But he seems like the kind of guy that, even if they did say, Brian, you know, we got to send you back down. You're going to go to AAA after this, after Danny gets healthy, or, you know, after the roster gets to a point where we've got to move. It kind of sounds like a guy that could deal with that and still produce. After all, going to AAA is, you know, for Brian, just as close as being at AA was. He's on that 40-man roster, and the reason he's here has as much to do with the talent as it does to do with his availability via a 40-man roster. The White Sox had made, you know, several moves that had removed players from that 40-man roster in the weeks prior to Brian Ramos being called up to the active roster for his first time. They had shuffled some players in and out and tried to take some flyers and held on to some guys to see if they could hold them for a little bit longer, but they had to make moves and DFA some players and trade some others and clear up some spots. And as far as infielders available to the White Sox on the 40-man, the only guys who are on the 40 and not on the active roster who play the infield are Danny Mendick, who's injured and probably coming back soon, Yoan Moncada, who's injured and not coming back all that soon, and Lenin Sosa, who's in the minors and has been here before. Other than that, every single 40-man roster infielder is on this active roster. That's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. So I would bet that one way or the other, Brian Ramos is likely to not spend the rest of the season here at the big league level. That still can be a wild success. I would say it probably already is for Ramos. And here's the other thing, too. Brian had gotten off to, we talked about it in some of the interview, Brian had gotten off to a little bit of a slow start this year at AA. And in the, I don't know, 10 games before being called up, something like that, had looked like the rhythm was back and been hitting better. I think he stroked a couple of home runs in a couple of games leading up to his call-up. And who's to say that, you know, that play, you know, that increased level of production is the same as what we're seeing here in the bigs, which I mean is like, maybe he got a boost, a trampoline effect from being here in the major leagues. You get a taste of this, and you don't want to give it up. So if Brian, who got off that slow start and now gets to the big leagues feeling great, seeing the ball go places, you know, understanding what he needs to do, I think, you know, he's got two doubles and a couple runs driven in. He's also shot the ball through the right side of the infield and gotten the job done. You know, he wasn't even looking for a hit there. He's looking to move the runner. gets the benefit of an RBI single there. I mean, that kind of stuff you can take with you to your next assignment if it is AAA for Brian and still continue to develop, still get the benefits of that launching pad in Charlotte, which can help a guy, and I think be right back up here sooner rather than later. So awesome to talk with Brian for the first time here on White Sox Weekly. I would imagine that is far from the last time we'll be talking with Brian Ramos here on White Sox Weekly. And a big thanks to him for spending some of his afternoon yesterday with us. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. A big thank you to our producers, Kevin Zipak and Brendan Riley. We've got the White Sox and Guardians coming up in just a few minutes. Our pregame show starts at 5:30, so don't go anywhere. This is the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.